Brian. And it is good to be together. And Beryl, where? Thank you. That was the absolute perfect introduction to some of the things that we're going to be talking about. So thank you. Thank you for that. And I love this. Christian business retreat. Every single one of those words, I am feeling so thankful for. This idea about knowing that I walk in this room singing those songs. And this is not just a group of people. This is family. So thank you for allowing me to be here. And I love this idea that Christian and business go together on that. Not two separate things, but they fit together. And then retreat. It has been a long time since we've been able to be together. And it is so good to be in a room. Anyone else prefer this than the little Zoom? Yes, it is so good to see you all. And I just have to say, I know that coming in here, like, there's a lot going on. I know that coming in, there's probably a lot going on in your world, just personally, I am coming in. Hope International was founded in Ukraine, and so we have 47 staff that are there right now, and the last several weeks have been, they have been exceptionally challenging trying to figure out safety of staff, caring for the entrepreneurs that we work with in Ukraine. And we now have three of our branch offices that are in areas that are under Russian control. We have staff that are trapped in certain cities that are experiencing the shelling right now. And I guess that's kind of, just to be candid, that's what I'm coming into today that is top of my mind. And here's what I know. It is good to be together with this group of people. It is good. It is so good to be together. This topic of Mission Drift is something that we started thinking about. We started researching a number of years ago because we wanted to say, what does it look like to be an organization that, yes, grows, yes, impacts more families, but does not lose what is most important? That line from Stephen Covey this morning, keeping the main thing, the main thing, the main thing. I read that book a long time ago, but I forgot about that line. I'm going to be using that. But that's it. How do we keep the main thing, the main thing, the main thing? After putting the book out, there was something that happened that really surprised me. But one of the calls that I got was from someone who their organization was featured in the book. And they were featured in the book as an example of Mission Drift, and an organization that had a very clear and compelling founding, that the gospel mattered, their faith mattered, and today that is very difficult to see how it actually makes an impact. And again, we were not writing about any of these examples that were somehow individuals would be ashamed of their identity or would not publicly acknowledge, you know what, faith is no longer part of who we are. But this call from this organization, it was from the YMCA. And the YMCA, if you look at the founding story, it's an unbelievable story of individuals impacted by the gospel and saying, we've got to reach the next generation. We've got to figure out effective ways to live out our faith and to impact. And I grew up going to the YMCA, and it was called the Y. It lost the MCA. I mean, it completely lost what the acronyms stood for. And so, again, we put this in the book not thinking it was in any way. We never wanted to, do investigative journalism that somehow individuals would not be publicly acknowledging of, yeah, that's actually not part of our identity. And I got this call from an executive at the YMCA, and he said, Peter, I read your book. And my heart dropped a little bit. I was like, oh no, did we get something wrong in this? And he said, I have to tell you a story. He said, the YMCA that I was the executive director of, he said, we were doing a construction project. And he said, we took down one of the old plaster walls, and this was one of the old YMCAs, one of the early ones when they came to the United States. And he said, we were doing this construction, and we found two copies of our original charter. And he said, we found these documents. We went into the conference room. We started looking at them. And he said, Peter, I wept reading these. This was an individual who was a person of faith who was working at the YMCA. And he said, I wept. And he said, I wept because I realized that we had completely lost what mattered most. We had completely lost what mattered most. And this was over 50 years in that situation. But I'd love for you just to turn to a neighbor and say, imagine 50 years, you have the ability of going back to your place of work. Go, imagine you have the place to go back to the organization that you care about, or maybe you're on a board of, or something that you see is having a vibrant mission, something that aligns your work and your faith. And tell me, what is it that would cause you to mourn if you were to go back and that would be lost? Take just 1 minute, turn to your neighbor. What would cause you to mourn if you were to find something that was written down that you had lost 50 years later? Take just 1 minute. Awesome. So to me, what I have come to realize is that it is difficult to have a business that lasts. It is difficult to have an enterprise that exists. It is difficult to have multiple generations. That is difficult. Doing that and making sure that the core element of faith, the core element of culture, making sure that is not lost, that is a degree of difficulty. And maybe it's just because the Olympics happened not that long ago, but does anyone know how diving is scored? Does anyone know on that? It's, you know, they talk about the splash, they talk about that, but there's also this element of degree of difficulty, right? That there are certain things that are just more difficult. And I would say the degree of difficulty that you have in the work that you are doing, the work that you are doing of trying to make sure you are growing vibrant enterprises and scaling and impacting and employing and culture and having an element where our faith is not relegated to the side, but it's a core element of who we are and what we do. That is a very high degree of difficulty. And after doing this work with thinking about mission drift, here's what I've come to believe is that a lot of organizations, a lot of leaders have this intentionality, but maybe you're not prepared for the degree of difficulty. And instead of this beautiful dive, this is what it actually looks like as individuals go in. And so here's my hope for our time today. My hope is real simple. My hope is that you would do one, two, or three things differently as a result of our time together today. My hope is that at the end of this, there might be one, two, or three things that you would commit to doing that would help you make sure that you do not experience mission drift, because it is all over. It is all over. And I find it interesting that this issue of mission drift, it's not just talked about in Christian literature. It's talked about a lot in the business world as well. And I find it so fascinating that Jim Collins, we kind of used our methodology, kind of employed it on him. But what I found so interesting in his book, Good to Great, is he talks about what it looks like to scale an enterprise and how important mission is. And then not long after that, does anyone know the book that he wrote a few years later? Does anyone know a book that came out a few years later? He had to come up with another book because a lot of the organizations that he profiled in Good to Great actually were not great. They actually experienced this fall. And so he had another book that came out, How the Mighty Fall. He had this book that basically looked at some of the case studies in his book and said, you know what? They did not pursue a path of faithfulness in our language. They actually lost track. And he had this other book that articulated why some of these organizations went off track. And I guess in a similar way, here's what I've come to believe. This topic of mission drift, this is not a once and done topic. Even the ones that we profile in the book, the most dangerous thing that could happen is that they might believe that they are immune to mission drift. They might believe that, you know what, we've figured it out. Our church has figured it out. Our company has figured it out. Our school has figured it out. This is a dynamic conversation. This is a dynamic conversation. And so again, my hope is at the end of our time today, there might be one, two, or three things that you might say, I'm going to do differently as a result of what our time was together. But let me just give you a little bit of the backdrop of why I care so much about this topic of mission drift. Let me give you a little bit of the backdrop and some examples that we have found, some of the ways that we have seen this happening in our lifetime. But the first kind of prompt on this was when I was traveling to Houston, and I was on the top floor of one of these buildings, and there was a foundation that was looking at funding Hope International. And it was great. It was, they had visited our programs, they had spent time with us, and there was alignment in terms of the geography. They loved microenterprise development. They loved helping entrepreneurs. They loved all of that. So this was the final meeting, and I got to be there, and I got to give the final pitch, sharing about the mission of Hope International. And I shared, and again, just this beautiful backdrop overlooking the city, and I will never forget. At the end of that, they said some kind words. They said, we really like the model of Hope International. We really like the work that you're doing. But they said, because we're a publicly traded company, you keep talking about faith. You keep talking about the church. You keep talking about Jesus. Just stop. Tone that down. And then we will be able to come alongside you. And they were looking at a seven-figure check to Hope International. This would have been transformational for us to reach so many more families. And I can tell you, in that moment, I really wanted to find a way to say yes. I really wanted to find a way to say yes. But I believe that that moment was the biggest gift that Hope International has ever been given, and it was not a check. It was opening up our eyes. It was opening up our eyes to how real Mission Drift is. We went back and we started doing some research and saying, in good conscience, could we accept this check and do this work? And we came to the conclusion, when we think about the ministry model that we have, when we think about who we are, it's not just about investing in entrepreneurs. It's not just about economic development. At the core of who we are is to introduce individuals to Jesus. That's at the core of who we are. And so no check. That mission is not for sale. There is no amount that would cause us to say, that's a good trade. That's a good trade. But in our research, we started to realize this issue of Mission Drift, it wasn't just facing Hope International. It is facing so many others. And does anyone know who this individual is? Anyone have any guesses? This is someone that you all know. It is a saint. It's not Francis. Any guesses? It's not a saint in the Bible. I love, you're just going through all of them right there. I respect that. I respect that. No, we celebrate him every December. Oh, St. Patrick. That would be a good one. That would be a good one if that was yesterday. Who? St. Nicholas. Who said St. Nicholas? There we go. Yeah, St. Nicholas. Exactly. So, and St. Nicholas is known as what? Santa Claus, right? We celebrate him, known as generosity, exactly, known around that. But did you know that St. Nicholas is also known as the patron saint of pawn shops? Now, a couple questions right there that prompts, right? A couple questions. Why? There's some people that say even the very logo of pawn shops, looking at the three different purses, tie to the story of St. Nicholas and how he went up to the window and put the money in. And why do pawn shops have a patron saint? And why is it St. Nicholas? And did you know that pawn shops, known originally as Montes Pietatis, I don't know if I pronounced that right, but that's something like that, that they were actually created by the church to care for individuals in need. Pawn shops were created by the Franciscans as a way to help individuals when they had a need. They could come to the church and they could pledge an asset. They could get the cash and the counseling and the support and the prayer so that they could weather a crisis. Pawn shops were seen as an effective ministry of the church. Now, how many of you today, when you drive by a pawn shop, get this feeling similar to Christmas about our dear brothers and sisters on the front line of ministry? How many of you have that sense of what an amazing group of individuals? I can't believe their hearts. I get moved. I get choked up thinking the sacrifices that they're making for individuals in need. No, what was created as something to care for those in need has now forgot its mission. And now I would say praise on that same very population that it was intended to create. This is not just a story of pawn shops, though. This is a story of so many organizations. And I believe the word drift is powerful because it happens slowly. And we can laugh when we think about pawn shops. But it is much harder to see in real time the slow way that there is a pull, that the tide is pulling us away. It is much more difficult to identify in real time than it is when we open up a history book and we can look back hundreds of years. I was with my son, Keith. And we were swimming in New Jersey at the beach, and it was one of these days that the storm was coming in. It was not a sunny day. It was a day that there was just, I mean, wonderful waves. We were having a blast in the waves, and the scariest moment of my life happened immediately after. Literally playing with my son. One moment to then watching him being pulled out to sea, watching him, I'll never forget, cresting a wave. I could not believe the speed he is being pulled out, and I could not get to him as a dad. Thankfully, a lifeguard saw what was happening, jumped in away, ended up getting to him, and ended up saving my son. Leaving the beach that day, we decided it was a good time to leave on that. Leaving the beach, we saw a sign that I'd never seen before. I'd walked by 100 times, but it was a sign that said, "Beware of riptides." And then it showed what happened, and I had walked by that sign blissfully unaware that that is a very real danger in that particular area. And in a similar way, could I just say, like, today, this morning, if nothing else, I want to hold up this sign and say, for those organizations, churches, charities, nonprofits, for-profits, business, it doesn't matter. If you have a mission that you care about, the path of least resistance, the most common path, is a path that in three generations, your founding passion, your mission will be unrecognizable. That is what I want you to know. That is the reality. But it doesn't have to be your story. It takes work to get out of the drift. It takes advanced preparation. It takes awareness. And that's what we want to talk about today. So again, I want you to turn to a friend on this and ask a question. What is it that causes organizations to drift from their founding purpose and passion? How does this happen? How does this happen? How do pawn shops go away from their mission, and how might this happen? So turn to a neighbor, 2 minutes, and I'd love to hear what you come up with. That's so good. That's so good. When Mission Drift came out, there was one friend in particular that said, "I know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen, and I really don't like this book." And he said, "Anytime I go to the board of directors and want to change anything, I know they're going to say mission drift on that," which is not at all what we're saying. I love how you connected it. It's just making sure those changes are actually still in alignment with that core mission on that. So not an argument against change by any means, but an argument for thoughtful, missional, intentional change on that as well. Man, these are so good. And I was just talking with Brian. I mean, in some ways, you don't need me here this morning because we can figure this out. Like, we can figure it out. We know that this is reality. My guess is we've all experienced this in some way with organizations. We're seeing this. We don't need a bunch of more information. We need to figure out how we turn this into application on that. But all of those are contributing factors. I thought today I would just try to do something real simple. I would give you my top three. My top three ways that mission drift happens, and then give you some very concrete ideas about ways to prevent it. So that's my hope. I'm going to give you three ideas, real simple. And again, my goal for this time is that there might be one, two, or three things that you might actually do differently. And just to give you a heads up, at the end of our time, I'm going to ask you to turn to a friend again before this is over and say, "And what did you write down? What are those application points of what you might do?" So maybe on your piece of paper, maybe there's some place, but just start jotting them down. What one, two, or three things might you do differently to make sure that mission drift is not your story as well? So the first area, and again, this is so simple. This is so simple, but the first way to prevent mission drift is actually to believe that drift does happen. And the fascinating thing, again, we modeled our methodology over Jim Collins and said, let's find organizations that are leaders in their sector. Let's find organizations that are leaders in their sector. And so we reached out to a variety. We reached out to schools and universities, reached out to nonprofits. We reached out to businesses and said, who are the exemplars in your sector of those organizations that have scaled, that have professionalized, and have retained their vibrancy of mission? And then we started getting on planes or trains. We spent over 200 hours interviewing leaders that of these organizations that had not drifted, and we were trying to figure out what are the common themes? What are the common themes? And this was the first common theme. When we started talking to them about mission drift, guess what their response was? They were not surprised by the topic. This was not the first time that they had heard or thought about mission drift, and maybe they had other language for it, but they were well aware that staying on mission, it requires hard work. It does happen. So this is this first piece. Do you actually believe that it could happen to you? Do you actually believe that it could happen to the organizations and enterprises that you care most about? And I want to give you a couple more examples in addition to pawn shops, just to make sure that I'm doing my job to say it happens a lot. This is a well-known university that had the mission statement, the founding mission statement, to be plainly instructed and consider well that the main end of life and studies is to know God and Jesus Christ. I'll give you a clue. It's not Rosedale on that. This is a well-known university. Does anyone know what university this might? Harvard. Yeah, exactly. I'm from New England, and we don't pronounce R's up there, so it's Harvard on that. But on the diploma for Harvard University, it has a seal, and the seal says Veritas, which means, but then it has a couple other words that until very recently, very, very recently, were taken off. But it has these other words. It says Veritas, and then it says Christo et Ecclesia around it. What does that mean? Yeah, truth. For Christ and the church. The mission statement. And if you go to Cambridge, Massachusetts, you can see things that are etched into stone about this is why they exist. And it is not in the classroom. They have walked away. But did you know that there was a group of individuals that saw that mission drift was happening at Harvard, and they said, we have to do something. And they said, it's too late. This is only 100 years after Harvard's founding. And so they decided to say, mission drift is happening. So let's move south and let's create an institution that does not drift from our mission to make sure that it is to plainly know God and Jesus Christ. Let's make sure that we create an institution of higher education that does not follow that pattern of drift. Where do you think they moved to? Yale is not a... They moved to New Haven, Connecticut, and it is Yale University. And they said it's not enough of Veritas, so let's make sure we tie it to the Lux. Let's make sure we tie it to the light of the world. And yet what happened to Harvard happened to Yale and happens today as well. I wanted to give you an example from business. It's not just higher education. This happens in business as well. These two individuals were titans of industry. Titans of industry. And if they were in Lancaster County, I promise you they would be at the Boost Retreat. They would be here among us today on these. These two individuals, passionate followers of Jesus, Christian business, and they would be here at this retreat there. Does one individual on the left made his money in oil, and the one on the right made his money in oats on that. Does anyone know who either of these individuals are? Titans of industry, one in oil, one in oats. Not Rockefeller, not Carnegie. The one on the left, let's go the other way here. The one on the left is J. Howard Pugh. Has anyone heard of the Pugh Charitable Trust on that? J. Howard Pugh was a passionate follower of Jesus, and he took his faith and turned it into action. He was passionate about the abolition movement and funding Christian organizations that were doing that. He also was passionate about Christian education. If you go to Grove City, if you go to Fuller, Moody, Gordon Conwell, all of those have buildings that have his name on it. He actually was involved in the founding of Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary because he didn't like the drift that was happening in some other institutions. And along with his friend Billy Graham, he said, we've got to launch a school. He also launched Christianity Today, the magazine. He was a passionate follower of Jesus that was doing unbelievable things in the world in his time. And the other individual, maybe you've heard, maybe not of him, but I know you've heard of his company, but Quaker Oats is what he was involved in founding. So not oil, but also a titan of industry. He was passionate about eradicating the red light district in Chicago, extremely generous. Biographers write that at a minimum, he was giving away 70% of his income. And he also had a friendship. It wasn't with Billy Graham, but it was with Dwight Moody. And the two of them did all kinds of amazing things together. They were gospel patrons in these movements at these moments in time not that long ago. Now, the question is, where is the estate of J. Howard Pugh and where's the estate of Henry Kroll? Because both of them set up trusts. Both of them set up long-term ways to fund ministries, to fund organizations that they cared about in their lifetime. And guess what? They're not both funding the same things today. The Pugh Charitable Trust, I say this with full confidence. You can read his biography, you can look at what they gave to in the last year, and I am positive that they are giving to organizations that are not just a little bit off, but diametrically opposed to what he believed. Diametrically opposed. In fact, I believe that if J. Howard Pugh knew how his funds were going to be used, he would have given it away in his lifetime, or he would have said, God, do not put those resources into my hands. He literally, I believe, would be turning over in his grave if he knew how his successors were giving away what he had been entrusted to steward. Now, this is a well-known situation. This is not our work, but there was a paper that came out in the Philadelphia Inquirer that was talking about the Pugh Charitable Trust and looking at this issue about whether or not drift happened. And the response from Rebecca Rimmel, who was running the trust, said this. She said, Howard was a man of strong convictions, and his successors on our board are following in his tradition by having strong convictions. Like, what's the flaw in logic on this one? Does it matter what those convictions are? Does it matter at all? And I would say that is a little bit of creative license to figure out how, as long as you're passionate, doesn't matter what you're passionate about, but that's how we are following and honoring J. Howard Pugh. If it were not so tragic, it would be humorous on that. That they literally are making decisions that I am positive are fully misaligned with his passions, with his faith, with his convictions, with who he was as an individual. But again, it doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to be. The Kroll Trust, Henry Kroll, he saw mission drift happening, and he said, I want to make sure that's not my story. So what did he do? He started out by just clearly articulating, here's who we are, here's what I believe, and he created some very simple structures. He put them in place to make sure that that drift would not happen to the estate that he had. So very simply, every year before they make allocation decisions, guess what they have to do? They have to read the charter. They have to read in his own words, are we actually being faithful to that? He articulated, here's what I believe I am called to. This is what, if you're coming after me, this is what you have to be about. He created an independent way of assessing whether or not those decisions are made in a very creative way to say, I know drift happens, and I'm going to create some safeguards. Who said that? Safeguards. I'm going to make sure there are some boundaries put in place to make sure that my estate is used to advance the causes that I am most passionate about. So what sectors have we looked at? Looked at education. We looked at nonprofits. We looked at businesses. And let me just give you one more. Let me just give you one more parallel story that their stories are so striking in their similarity. But two individuals that said, we've got to do something. A Presbyterian minister named Dr. J. Calvin Clark went to China, saw incredible need, and said, do you feel that Americans are doing all they can do to help? A friend asked him that, a missionary friend. He was asked this question, and his answer was, no, we got to do something. We've got to show up. Our faith compels action. We've got to respond to this need. And so we created an organization in 1938. And today, this organization has over 2 million children that are sponsored. It has been a vibrant organization within the space, impacting now millions of kids around the world. Another individual is named Everett Swanson, also a Presbyterian ministry, also went to Asia, not to China, but to Korea, also had a missionary friend that asked him a question on that trip. You've seen the tremendous needs and unparalleled opportunities of this land. What do you intend to do about it? He also said, my faith compels my action. And so in 1952, we created an organization that also today has over 2 million children that are sponsored in that. Don't these stories sound almost interchangeable? Don't those stories seem almost like the same story? But again, we have the gift now of years, of decades, and we can see where they are today. But does anyone know which two organizations these are? Who said Compassion? Yeah, Compassion is one. And the other one? Not World Vision? Anyone remember the 80s commercials with Sally Struthers? Yeah, Christian Children's Fund, right? Now, Christian Children's Fund is actually no longer Christian Children's Fund. They changed their name to Child Fund today. So it's Child Fund and Compassion. And again, these stories that sound really, really similar. With Child Fund, when they changed their name, one of the board members said this: this organization has nothing to do with Christianity. But your name is Christian Children's Fund, but you were created by a minister that wanted to bring faith and action together, and now we have a board member saying this organization has nothing to do with Christianity. And then the president, when they changed the name, said this: an organization changes slowly. And then all of a sudden, you realize the changes have happened so much that you need to step back and see if you're putting out the name that really reflects who you are. And what did she say? We've changed slowly over time, and when we take a step back and when we look at our name, Christian Children's Fund, we actually have nothing to do with Christianity, and so we're going to change our name to Child Fund as a final and symbolic act that they have walked away from their faith. And again, I think that grieves the founding generation. I think that grieves those that had been investing year over year. But the other organization, Compassion International, it was fascinating that there was a group of consultants that came in and said to Compassion when Wes Stafford was a president and said this. They said, we love your name, and all you got to do, though, is downplay the Jesus talk. Change your tagline, downplay that, and then you'll be able to have more corporate partnerships. And then you'll be able to grow more, to reach more families. And then you'll be able to expand your impact. And Wes's response was this. He said, we thought for 10 seconds and said, no, not now, not ever. That is how you prevent mission drift. That is conviction. That is a leader who knows how to lead. He said, our mission includes the very vibrancy of it. It is all about Jesus, and you can't take that away. That, to me, is another example. One final one on this. But the book, the Bible, is full of mission drift. In fact, in many ways, it feels like reading through the pages of Scripture, it just is wave after wave of individuals forgetting who they are and then eventually coming back. But I think no example is more profound than this. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Who said that? If you didn't get that one, I mean, it's pretty easy here. What's the context of this? What's the context? Do you remember? They're looking out into the promised land, right? And he makes this bold declaration. And he says, not just for me, but for my household. He's making a declaration for his grandkids on that. He's making a declaration. And there is the most incredible things that this generation has seen and is about to see. Miracle after miracle. If ever there were going to be a group of people that would not drift, wouldn't it be Joshua and his family and his descendants, and yet how long before they drifted? How long? You don't have to look very far. In my Bible, it's one page. The book of Joshua ends, and then what book comes next? Judges. Book of Judges begins with this. After the whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, another generation grew up who neither knew the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their ancestors, who had brought them out of Egypt. That is mission drift, and it happened fast. And what generation is it? It's the grandkids. It's the grandkids. And I love that the author, to make an exclamation point, he writes down, not only did they walk away, but they forsook the Lord. And then he reminds them of what had just happened in recent history. What had just happened? Who brought them out of Egypt? The most amazing rescue, the most incredible, incredible, incredible story that is their story that happened just a few generations ago. They talked to individuals that ate the manna. They talked to individuals that walked on dry land. Like, they saw the most amazing miracles, and they happened. And again, I read this, and I say, if it happened to them, oh, is it possible that it could happen to us? Dr. Paul Tripp writes this. He writes, the passions of the first generation too often become the preferences of the second generation and become irrelevant to the third generation. Passions.
And offensive to the next generation.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. That's good. And offensive to the next generation. So with that, how do we identify it? If that's the end result, right? If that's what we see and that's it, how might we know in real time if mission drift is happening? How might we have indicators? How might we be paying attention to the small signs of compromise that might actually be taking root? So I'd love for you to turn to a friend again. What would be signs of mission drift in the organizations that you care about? Talk about that for 2 minutes, and then we'll come back together. We are at the end of the first session. Man, I feel like this has been a very depressing morning so far on that. But here's what I believe. Unless we actually see this as a problem that could impact us, we're not willing to do the work. We're not willing to take the next steps in figuring out, so how do we make sure that's not my story? So my apologies for all of the stories. My apologies, but I actually really do believe this matters. It is possible. This is, again, like the sign on the beach. It is possible that there is a riptide that we are all playing around, and I just don't want any more organizations to follow this well-worn path. I really don't. I think our world needs organizations. Our world needs leaders who are willing to combine their faith and their work. We need a creative approach to gospel proclamation and demonstration in our world. The world needs this. And there are too many that over time begin to slowly compromise and lose that. And I just don't want any more case studies of mission drift. I want this to be a room of case studies that in 50 years, the vibrancy of what decisions you make are stories that have a great long-term story of incredible impact. I want more of those stories to be told. So we're going to come back after the next session, and we're going to be hearing a little more about practical steps that we can take to prevent mission drift and to make sure that we are a group of individuals that are doing everything possible to stay mission true. Thanks.